Maine is the most forested state in the U.S. 90% is covered by trees, more than 17 million acres. And we use the forests to make paper and other products. So how do we make sure that we manage them to protect not only the trees, but the ecosystems that support wildlife and the capacity for carbon sequestration to curb the pace of climate change? I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll find out what's being done in the effort to manage our forests in a sustainable way, to make them more resistant to drought and pests and other potentially destructive forces. Preserving our forests, Maine Calling, is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. How do we fully use our forests without doing them harm? Today we'll explore the practices that keep Maine's forests sustainable for the future. Joining me, Laura Kenefick, Supervisory Research Forester and team leader with the U.S. Forest Service's Northern Research Station based in Maine, and Adam Dagno, director of the School of Forest Resources at the University of Maine. He's also the E.L. Giddings Associate Professor of Forest Policy and Economics. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you concerned about the health of Maine's forests? Should you be? Email talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Adam Dagno, we'll start with you. Sustainability in the modern world is usually a good thing for things that we want to preserve, but I'm guessing that maybe, you know, forest sustainability is not something that's on the minds of most people every day. It takes a long time for trees to grow. And maybe we just take for granted that there are smart and dedicated people like yourself who are just sort of quietly taking care of this for us while we're doing more sort of urgent things. Is that the way the should the public be allowed to take that view? Or do you believe that there should be more interest, I guess, in what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Keith, and pleasure to be here, particularly here on the panel with Laura Kenefick, who can speak on this equally, if not better than myself, given her long experience also working at this topic, particularly in sort of the Maine woods. So here now, I've been at the School of Forest Resources for close to a decade now, and maybe we can have this perception as ourselves that we're biased, that everyone in Maine is well versed in forest management and has a great interest in how our forests and forest ecosystems are managed. Recent work that we've done suggests that maybe is not the case, as you noted, Keith, and that people have some different perceptions on really how our forests should be utilized. So even and one of that, a lot of it stems from, you know, what is forest management and what's been sort of happening in the woods now, and then how has that changed maybe since compared to some historical practices and context. Maine itself is close to 90% forested. We're the most heavily forested state in the country in terms of percentage-wise, and so that means we're surrounded by this ecosystem day in and day out. Any Mainer can know that it's really hard to walk outside their front door and not see forests, right? To be inspired by that to some degree. And so the key that again, what we do here within the School of Forest Resources is train our students, engage with professionals, conduct research and service and outreach to really help people understand how the forests can be managed and how we can be basically use them sustainably. And in my mind, that's allowing sort of present use to meet the needs of both from an ecological, social, cultural, and economic perspective, but also how we can preserve this resource to benefit future generations as well.
And so, Laura, what we're talking about when we say sustainability is the assumption is we're using the forests, we're taking trees out of them, we're recreating in the forests, and there has to be a balancing equation, right? As an outside observer, I would guess that the equation is that over time, trees come out, assets come out of the forest, and that over time, the equation should either even out, more planting goes in, assets go back in. Is that the general balance, or what is the equation?
Thanks, Keith. That's a good question. And I appreciate Adam's introduction. He laid a good groundwork for this. I think when we think about forests, we don't always recognize that they're very dynamic. So change is going to happen whether we are actively managing the forest or not. And in fact, almost none of the forests of Maine today represent the condition that they were in before European colonial settlers came here. And so we're starting from a condition that has been affected by more than decades, centuries of extraction of products for different uses. And so when we look at the forest today, many of us, if we don't have, you know, a skilled eye to pick out different species or see the nuances of structure, just know that there's forest there and we know whether we like that forest or not. But often it might be different than what we would be there in the absence of this long history of use. And so as we think about sustainable use of the forest, as Adam said, it's thinking about what do we want or what do we need from this forest now? How can we accomplish that without degrading the forest so it can't provide those values in the future? But it's also often thinking about what I would call rehabilitation or restoration of the forest, because there's been this long history of use and things are so different than they would have been without human intervention. At times we're missing certain species of trees that would naturally occur there. Or there are some sizes of trees. For example, it could be very large trees that aren't as present on the landscape as they were at one time. So from my perspective, sustainable use includes both taking what we need now and recognizing that those needs exist and will continue to exist, maintaining the forest so that it can regrow the amount of wood that we've taken, or that new trees can grow behind those that were removed. But often we're trying to bring back some of the things that were lost over time. And one point that I'll make that is actually quite interesting, and I think not everyone who doesn't work in forest realizes, is here in Maine, we are blessed with abundant precipitation year round. And that doesn't always feel like a blessing when it's pouring rain outside and we've got feet of snow in the winter. But because of that, we have a good opportunity for trees to naturally regenerate and grow. So we have seed sources or many species that will sprout. So for example, red maple, which many folks know because it has such beautiful colors in the fall. If you cut a red maple tree, it will regrow a number of stems from the stump that you've left behind. So that's a species that we can get both from seed and from resprouting of harvested trees. So it's quite uncommon in Maine actually to plant trees. That's done if we want to change the species. So for example, you know, plant a species that isn't on the site, and that's often done for production. Or if we want to enrich a place, so bring back something that we've lost. Other than that, we are relying on what we call natural regeneration. So new trees from the seeds and the stumps of the trees that are there already.
You're also managing the forest, though, not just to regenerate future forest product materials, because this is also this provides ecosystems that wildlife depend on, important wildlife.
Oh, absolutely.
And more recently, of course, the carbon sequestration. So like the the mitigating value of the forests to offset the causes of climate change.
Yes, thank you for emphasizing that. And I'm going to let Adam speak some to the, I think the carbon management is really an area of expertise for him. But you're right that, you know, when we talk about managing forests, and usually what we mean by that is harvesting trees, the removal of the trees is a byproduct of what we're trying to accomplish in the forest. And that's what sustainable forestry is about, focusing on what we're trying to create in the forest rather than what we're trying to remove. And you mentioned wildlife habitat. That is really a priority for so many folks in Maine. And in fact, the Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Program here in the state has a lands program that focuses solely on managing forest lands for the benefit of wildlife species. So it's important, and I appreciate you emphasizing that, that we don't fall into the trap of thinking that we're just managing forests for the wood products that we need. You're right, we're managing them for wildlife habitat, for recreation opportunities, to maintain cultural resources for Indigenous peoples. All of those things are objectives when we're applying forest management. Adam, did you want to speak to the carbon piece?
Yeah, Laura said all that very quite eloquently. Speaking on the carbon sequestration in itself, Maine's forests are a pivotal sort of resource towards helping Maine and the state achieve a lot of its sort of climate change mitigation and greenhouse gas reduction goals. Some of the latest data that we've done working with the state of Maine, in addition with colleagues like Daniel Hayes and Ivan Fernandez here at the University of Maine, has identified that because forests are being sustainably managed and that forests are growing at a faster rate here in Maine than we're cutting that forest, and or the products that we're making out of the harvested wood can also store and sequester carbon, that Maine is pretty close to being what we would call net zero or carbon neutral. And that's largely because 90 to 95% of the emissions that are coming from, you know, our transportation, electricity generation, and other industrial processes are being currently sort of removed by our growing forest here in the state. So that's a huge, huge asset that we have, not just for the timber that it provides, but for that sequestration that we can couple on. One thing I just want to bring up with that is stemming from some of these discussions about really what Laura's talking about, and I think what a lot of people think of when they talk about sustainable forest management is it okay to cut, right? And so there's a long-standing sort of discussion amongst the broad, you know, public is the idea of whether or not cutting trees is appropriate. And I think Laura said it quite well, is that depending on what the outcomes you're looking for, in many cases, we do have to take active management role in the woods, which involves harvesting trees, which can actually lead to more healthy and resilient forests in many, many cases. Not necessarily all preserves have a great role as well, but we have to recognize what that balance may be.
We're all aware of in other realms of resource management, I'll point to say fishing, where there's disagreement, I guess, outright fierce disagreement about management practices and what's best to strike the balance between protecting the resource and still allowing industries to operate. Is it less so in the forestry world? Are scientists aligned with the forest products industry on best practices for balancing all of these factors in this complicated equation? And either of you, I can ask Laura. I'll go to you, I guess.
I mean, I don't think there's any topic related to natural resource management that doesn't have some controversy and difference of opinion in it. But one thing that I'll note here in Maine is that we have a very long history of working within and living within the woods. And many, many folks here in our state are accustomed to the forest being managed, and they themselves or someone they know might rely on working in forest industry for the well-being of their family. It's such a big part of our rural economy. So I think that we're fortunate here in Maine in that we have seen strong support for forest management. And I think a key piece of that is recognizing that there is no one right way to decide what to do with a forest or to manage a forest. And as Adam mentioned, you know, what you hope to achieve from the forest is really important. And one of the things that we haven't touched on that I don't want to lose track of is there are a lot of things affecting our forest that weren't happening in years past. And a really good example is non-native invasive species. So we now have insects and diseases here in our forests that have come from other parts of the world and don't have the natural checks that they did in the places that they came from. And they're causing oftentimes widespread mortality of trees that really affect the forest ecosystem. And that's an example, I think, where this idea that there is management that you can do that could be helpful for improving the resilience of the forest, providing us with more healthy forests in the future, is something not to lose track of. As a researcher for the U.S. Forest Service, I am now responsible for experiments in different approaches to forest management that were started back in the early 1900s. And I have the privilege to work not only with the data that I'm collecting now, but all the data that was collected by scientists for generations before me. And we see over the very long term that even in the absence of management, forest change will occur. And so if we think about management as directing that change, I think it gives us a platform for common understanding with people who have different priorities.
You mentioned resilience, which is something I want to get to. I heard a story recently on our air about some farmers out west who are planting a wide variety of genetically distinct types of wheat, specifically to sort of hedge their crops against these threats, pests, drought, disease, all of these external factors that can come in. I think it was referred to as fighting chaos with chaos. Is that simple principle being applied in forestry as well?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we think often about diversity and biodiversity. And in the history of forest management, I'm going to say within the last century here in Maine, there were times when we really focused our actions on favoring a few species, the things that were the most beneficial for the forest products industry. So a really good example would have been in the early to mid 1900s on our conifer dominated or softwood dominated forest sites. So where we have like spruce and fir, hemlock, northern white cedar. Spruce and fir were preferred over other species because of demand in the pulp and paper industry. So there's a lot of places where we would discourage other species from growing. And now we're in a situation where market dynamics are different. Insect and disease concerns are different. We now have the balsam woolly adelgid, which is an insect that's been moving north with climate change, that are affecting those species in a way that they weren't in the past. And now we're saying, oh gosh, maybe that wasn't the best plan. Maybe a more resilient forest, like the resilient farm that you mentioned, is one that has a lot of diversity in it. And that could be diversity of different species, diversity of different sizes and ages of trees, and also diversity when we think about genetics. There can be some adaptation across the range of a species. So though we might have, for example, red spruce growing up here, there's red spruce growing south of here too, and the genotype might be a little different. The genetics might be more adjusted to the warmer climate down there. So in addition to diversifying species, there's been some interest on the research front in bringing up some southern genotypes of the species we have here. So bringing in diversity at all those different levels is absolutely a hallmark of managing for resilient forests across the landscape as a whole.
Great. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have a lot of guests today, but we do want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. What does it take to make Maine's forests more sustainable so that we can harvest trees and still have more for the future? With me are Adam Dagno, Associate Professor of Forest Policy and Economics and Director of the School of Forest Resources at the University of Maine, and Laura Kenefick with the U.S. Forest Service. She's the Supervisory Research Forester and Team Leader at the Northern Research Station based in Maine. Share your comments and questions. What do you know about how Maine's forests are managed? If anything, email talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now on the line is Joshua Henry, co-founder and president of Timber HP, and he's a materials chemist. Thank you for joining, Josh. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So Timber HP makes, I've been reading, a number of products, including wood fiber insulation. What was there a eureka moment that you had that led to the creation of this company and its products?
Yeah, there was. This product is a product that has been in the commercial markets in Europe for over 20 years. It's manufactured at scale. It's it's three products really. It's a loose fill insulation for attic cavity insulation. It's a bat product that's for, you know, between studs and in construction, and then a timber board product that is basically a direct replacement for foam insulation outboard of the sheathing of a building. And I think the eureka moment in some ways was looking at what was happening in the forest products industry in Maine, as others have talked about, and the decline of paper to some extent, and seeing this product in Europe and thinking, really, that's a product that would be a great fit for the Northeast, and wondering why the product hadn't been manufactured at scale here in North America.
How do you see what you do at Timber HP as promoting sustainable practices?
So all of our suppliers are FSC and SFI chain of custody certified. Ultimately, we're a startup company, so we just started manufacturing our first two products this year. But ultimately, our goal is to be fully, to every product that goes out the door, to be stamped sustainable certified, either SFI or FSC. And I think that's vital to our product, because one of our differentiators as a product is we're a cost-effective product with foam, fiberglass, and mineral. Well, what differentiates us is that you're paying the same for a product that is more sustainable, environmentally beneficial, not just like more sustainable, but a product that actually is carbon sequestering and helps combat climate change. So I think that is only really possible through sustainable forestry. And I think the way in which we're contributing to sustainable forestry is by consuming the residuals of the lumber industry, the residuals of the silviculture industry, and helping provide a market for those less valuable products that are out there on the market from a silviculture standpoint.
Sure. Josh Henry, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Josh Henry, co-founder and president of Timber HP. I also want to bring in a representative from the Maine Forest Service. Hi, Morton, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Morton Mosswild with the Maine Forest Service. I just wanted to outline some of the work that Maine Forest Service does. We are a bureau in the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And people might be familiar with different aspects of our work. You've had Allison Kenody, our state forest entomologist, on. We have a staff of forest health experts that are monitoring conditions all the time. We do a lot of inventory work to basically understand what's happening in Maine forests and how growth is happening and species are growing. We also have the forest rangers, who are forest protection folks, essentially protecting the land from wildfire, and also they have a law enforcement role. And then we have our field foresters, our district foresters. We do a lot of education working with private landowners, foresters, private foresters, loggers, essentially trying to get information out to any and all audiences. That's really our mandate, is to work with everybody to try to provide them the best information we can and give them the tools they need to make good decisions, whether they're landowners or forest professionals.
Sure. Morton, now most of the state, I understand most of the forest land is privately owned in Maine. Are there, when what we're talking about in terms of sustainability is largely best practices kinds of stuff. Is it codified in state law at all? Are there regulations that say, you know, you can limits to clear cuts or something, I imagine, but is there anything in the law that says, yeah, you have to do things to some degree sustainably, or is that just a sort of practice by the owner and encouraged by all the organizations that we're hearing from?
Well, landowners do have a fair amount of discretion in making decisions about their land, and I think Laura was outlining earlier some of the, you know, the complexity of forests and how each situation is really can be quite different. So the techniques, the silvicultural approaches that any landowner might be taking, really are, there's a broad range of options. At the same time, there are regulations, as you mentioned, about clear cutting, the extent and size of clear cuts, and also to protect water bodies and water quality. So how harvesting around water bodies, streams and rivers and lakes and wetlands needs to take place. And so a lot of folks have been working really hard, especially over the last 20 or 30 years, where the industry has really focused on what are the techniques that we need to use? How do we go about working around water bodies to make sure that those water bodies are protected?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you so much for joining and getting the state's perspective. I appreciate that. Adam, to this point again, though, we're talking primarily about recommended practices, right? There are no requirements that landowners do the things that we're many of the things that we're talking about. But is there self-interest? Are they driven by the fact that most of them want to maintain their assets?
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think Mort really summarized sort of the sort of arena of policy here in the state. We're really emphasizing that there's a lot of diversity within terms how our forests can be managed and potentially should be managed. And so what that does is it really drives the specific landowner, manager to manage towards the objectives of their given company, family, or entity. But I would say that high proportion of the landowners throughout the state are really interested in this aspect of sustainability for a couple of reasons. One, Josh made some references to forest certification schemes, right? That many companies actually have to just adhere to even get into the market today, and a lot of the sort of forestry practices that are sort of commonly applied here in Maine, particularly around natural regeneration, apply quite well to FSC or SFI type standards. So it works closely with that they can benefit from the type of systems that we're in. But we also have to acknowledge that not everyone has that really long run sustainable perspective. We've had a lot of landowner change in the last 30 years. And it's almost gone in two different directions. One, there's much more area that's owned and managed by conservation groups or has conservation easements on it, which might have, again, a longer run perspective compared to some that are more on the investment side through timber investment management organizations or real estate investment trusts that are really driven by the shareholders to provide a return on investment. And sometimes with that, they can draw some practices that maybe are much more extractive or near-term or oriented. That's not to say that all of them are operating in that specifically, but some of the research that's been done sort of points to that sort of bimodal effect that we might see on the landscape as a result of varying objectives and sort of time perspectives that people are operating under.
Yeah, Laura, did you want to add something?
I like that Adam mentioned the time perspective. And in some of our research, we've seen that some of the practices that are more degrading, Adam mentioned that, things that focus on extraction of value today rather than maintaining a good, healthy forest for the future, over the long term, so over the period of many decades, they reduce the forest's ability to generate that return on investment that a well-managed forest does. So when you're looking beyond the initial harvest, even from a financial perspective, there is a disincentive to doing forestry practices that are not sustainable because the forest land owner then doesn't have the opportunity to come back in the future and manage that forest again because they need to wait longer for the forest to recover or the tree quality or tree health is poor. So I think that it's interesting, you know, he mentioned certification, these other considerations, but I think just the sort of financial aspect of forestry itself over a very long term creates a motivation to utilize sustainable forestry practices.
Let's bring in some of our patient listeners. We'll go to Anita in Camden. Hi, Anita, welcome.
Hi there. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm very interested in knowing how the forestry practices in Maine have been informed by the discoveries discussed in Suzanne Simard's book, Finding the Mother Tree, which speaks of the fungal mycelia interconnections between trees that provide communication between same species and different species trees, and also the importance of certain diverse species in maintaining the health of the forest.
Yeah.
How Anita, has that informed the way the forest is managed in Maine?
Yeah, Anita, thank you. Laura, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. I know that that book really elevated forestry for many folks that weren't perhaps otherwise versed in it. And I think what's interesting about this discovery is that although the scientific mechanism was articulated, this relationship between trees is something that I think has been considered for a very long time in tribal forestry and is in part of indigenous practice and indigenous ways of knowing. And the work that has emerged in the last 20 years in forestry research, and we're now seeing, I'd say over the last decade, increasingly implemented on forest lands, particularly public forest lands, falls into the realm of what we call ecological forestry. And that means that rather than simply focusing on what we desire from the forest in terms of commodities or wildlife habitat or recreation, we consider the underlying ecological relationships and we make adjustments to our forestry practice. So for instance, retaining some trees on the landscape forever, planning to never harvest those. So within a stand that you're managing, you might have designated areas or designated trees. And here you could consider those relationships that the caller mentioned to that you would retain for biodiversity purposes or for legacy purposes. And I think this increasing awareness of the need to incorporate these other considerations into forestry and the realization that indigenous peoples have a lot of experience with this and we're stewarding the forest long before we came are ideas that we're seeing emerging in forest practices recently.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of this conversation about sustainability in forestry. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, sustainable forest practices and why they matter. My guest, Laura Kenefick, is with the U.S. Forest Service's Northern Research Station based in Maine, and Adam Dagno is with UMaine's School of Forest Resources. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. I want to go to Senator Troy Jackson now. He's a state Senate president and he's a fifth generation logger. Senator Jackson, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Appreciate being on today.
So obviously, logging is an important part of your family's history, an important part of where you live in Maine and the people you represent. And I imagine it's changed for many years. But is there a new emphasis on sustainability, would you say, now more than ever?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say that there's more of an emphasis on sustainability. I think certifications have certainly come about that, you know, people talk about more. But when I think of sustainability, I also think of the sustainability of the people on the ground that's doing the work. And that has actually become more and more of a problem. I think everyone across the state knows that less and less people are getting into logging, less people are able to afford it. The costs have been going up considerably while the rates have not matched. And when you do that, when you're in a production-based system, what that means is that the forest probably is not going to be sustainable, because the only way the loggers can make that up is by overcutting, cutting corners, doing things that are not good for the forest. And that, I think, is the real challenge nowadays. I mean, this is a very specialized industry where, you know, people could stand the tree back on the stump if you ask them to, but they have to be paid to do that. And that just is not keeping up. And that's what I see as the big problem with sustainability now. I mean, in fact, we had to pass legislation last session to actually make it so that the certification programs, you know, had rigorous standards in there that loggers could feel more comfortable that they weren't going to be used poorly by the large landowners. And you're talking about an independent contractor system now that, you know, the logger is totally the one that is doing all the work, but yet they're the ones that are having all the requirements put on them with very little, if no extra compensation for that. So that's one thing I definitely think about. The other thing I think about as far as sustainability for the overall health of the forest, what it does for recreational opportunities and stuff like that. And now we have more landowners that are actually using aerial herbicide spray, which I think is, you know, horrific for the forest here in Maine. And I don't think that's good for, you know, our recreational economy at all. So that's, you know, a different perspective, but certainly something that I see and understand very well, not only from my background as a logger, but from all the work that we've tried to do in the legislature, trying to make it better for forest contractors.
Yeah, you mentioned the work that you've done. Is there anything on a legislative level that could address either of the issues that you just raised?
Well, like I said, we passed LD 1874 last session. The trouble is that we have a forestry department that's willing to actually implement the law and hold up the standards. I mean, we've had a long-standing law here in Maine. We've referred to it as the 15-day rule, meaning that in the summertime, if loggers cut wood and it's set on the ground for over 15 days, they could have the state, have a state scaler come in and scale the wood so they could get paid, and their wood wouldn't sit there and dry out in the summer months. As of now, I mean, it's been hard to get the department to actually enforce that law. And so we went back and made it more stringent in 1874 in that certification system. But again, if they don't implement it, then it's, you know, completely useless. The other thing that, you know, we did do on the area of the herbicide was we actually put a ban on area of the herbicide. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed it. You know, when I first started in the woods, there was very little of anyone spraying area of the herbicides. And the forest grew very good. If anything, it grew better. And, you know, to use that, I think, really hurts the health of the forest. I believe strongly hurts the health of the people in those areas. And that's something I really feel strongly should be stopped in the future.
All right, Senator. Senate President Troy Jackson, Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your perspective. Comment from either of you. Laura, go ahead.
Yeah, having the discussion about sustainability of the workforce is a really good one and an important one. And I know that Adam has been doing some work on that as well. But an additional aspect of that that I wanted to mention is not only with regard to workforce sustainability, but in solving these challenging issues that are coming before us, we really need to bring everyone to the table so that we are taking advantage of the good ideas that different folks have. And traditionally, forestry and particularly the logging industry haven't had many folks that are women, gender minorities, or from traditionally underrepresented racial and ethnic groups. And I think, you know, there's been greater awareness of the importance of making sure that everyone has the opportunity to participate in forestry, that they feel included in those conversations. And I'll note just a couple examples, the Women Foresters Collaborative, which is active in Maine, the SWIFT program at the university that supports women and non-binary people in forestry. And also, as I mentioned earlier, the increasing awareness of respecting and protecting Indigenous ways of knowing and tribal forestry. So I think as we have these conversations about sustainability of the workforce, about the different ideas that folks have, having some emphasis on opening up the field to folks who haven't traditionally been included is an important one to have.
I did want to mention we were hoping to speak with Chuck Lavelle, who is the host of a TV series, which was a sort of a hook, as we say in the biz, for this program. But that begins tonight on Maine Public Television. It's called America's Forests, and that begins airing tonight. So for those of you with an interest in this subject, that is a must watch. I want to bring in Maddie Eberle. And Maddie is a specialist with the Low Impact Forestry Program at the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners and Farmers Association. Maddie, welcome.
Hi, Keith. Thank you.
So the Low Impact Forest Program probably does what just like it sounds like, but what is it? What does it really actually look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Low Impact Forestry Program has been running much longer than my position here within MOFCA. So the program is really kind of built by a community of foresters and loggers, woodlot enthusiasts, who are really just kind of like seeing some of the, you know, industrial practices in the state and saying, hey, like, what can we do better? What can we do on our own land? So they came together and created this really wonderful community, just kind of focused on sustainable forestry. So thinking about soil health, water quality, species diversity, structural diversity, really just kind of trying to move forward, you know, the health of the forest while still being able to, you know, access timber. And for a lot of the folks that we work with, it's definitely folks who are using, you know, small equipment. They'll be on a farm tractor with a forestry winch on the back, or maybe they have draft animals, though there aren't too many folks doing that anymore. And, you know, folks, we do trainings for like chainsaw safety and bandsaw milling. So really, within our program here, we try to empower people to get into their own woods and do the forestry work out there. Of course, we encourage people to talk to your district forester or a consulting forester, you know, to kind of get that forester's perspective as well. But really, we're hoping to empower people to do sustainable forestry, you know, right out their back door.
Yeah. Would you say that MOFCA has different ideas about what sustainability looks like than some of the other entities that you referenced?
No, I think that so low impact forestry is kind of built upon principles that are guided by, you know, like I mentioned before, soil, water, ecology, diversity. And so I think that what it looks like is really dependent on the forest that you're working in, the land use history, kind of what your own management goals are for the land. So how to get from A to B, it looks very different for everyone. And so using, you know, academic resources, research, and whatnot to inform those decisions, and being sure to access your resources around you are really what we encourage folks to do. Forestry can look different for everyone, I think. And so we just encourage people to take the health of the forest first through whatever endeavor they pursue.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your take. Maddie Eberle, MOFCA's Low Impact Forestry Specialist. Let's work in some calls if we can here. Only a few minutes left. Let's go to Don in Edgecombe. Let's see if I can get Don. Don, go ahead. Welcome to the
program. Hi. I'm in Edgecombe. I'm on 11 acres, and I'm surrounded by a tree farm. And my question may be off base, but what's going on with the new beech fungus that's going around this area of the state?
Beech fungus? Laura, is that a question for you?
Yeah. Beech is a wonderful tree that, when it doesn't have a lot of things happening to it, grows large and straight, smooth bark. And unfortunately, beech has just got everything going against it right now. And I'm not entirely sure what the caller is referring to, but one thing we are seeing that's quite widespread in the state is the beech leaf disease, which is spread by, scientists think, a nematode. They don't really know how it's getting from one tree to another, but it's quite widespread and causing damage to the leaves of the beech and at times mortality of the beech. And that is a situation that seems to be getting worse and that researchers don't know the solution to at this time. They don't have suggestions about how to manage your forest so that the beech aren't suffering from that. Mm. I think the best advice that folks have is just to try to maintain a healthy forest and vigorous trees that will be more resilient to these sorts of pests. But yes, indeed, the beech are having some challenges now. And the Maine Forest Service can provide specific information on that if
you look online. Okay, great. Thank you. And I just want to bring in one last voice here. Alec is calling from Chelsea. Hi, Alec. Welcome.
Thank you for this program. Congratulations on having it. I just want to start off by saying, recognizing something that I think we often take for granted, and that is how blessed we are in Maine to have the forest that we have. Our forests are globally significant. Experts have told us that it is the largest mixed wood temperate forest in the world. It also has extraordinary significance for neotropical warblers and a whole variety of other species. So we ought to start recognizing that this is really one of the two major resources that defines Maine. The coast.
I just want to let you know we have 1 minute left. So fair.
Yeah. All right. So with that being said, I agree with all of what Laura and Adam have said, but I did want to point out that to address the issue that Troy Jackson was talking about, as in other things, you get what you pay for in forestry. And what we need to do as a society is move toward paying for the full suite of values that our forests provide, including those things that Troy mentioned, sustaining a workforce. We at the New England Forestry Foundation, which I work for, have secured a $30 million grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we are actively working with landowners and loggers to pay them for practicing what we call climate-smart forestry, which are things that don't pay on their own, okay, but things that we value from the forest and we want to see represented.
Right. Alec, thank you so much, and thanks for being patient here. I did want to work you in at the end, and that's an interesting thought. It is the thought, unfortunately, that we're going to have to leave on. No more time for this. We could talk all afternoon, but I want to thank my guests, Adam Dagno, Associate Professor of Forest Policy and Economics and Director of the School of Forest Resources at the University of Maine, and Laura Kenefick, as with the U.S. Forest Service. She's the Supervisory Research Forester and Team Leader at the Northern Research Station. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And you can find our past shows and sign up for Maine Calling's weekly newsletter by going to mainecalling.com. maine.org. You can also share your thoughts with Maine Calling by using the Maine Public Vox Pop app. Download it, and you can easily record your comments, which we will then share on the program. Tomorrow on the show, we'll learn about French, Canadian, and Acadian foods and culinary traditions. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.